place was?
San Marino was a small republic which was on a kind of a high, small mountain which overlooked the area where we were fighting in. And we always believed, although we never sure, that the Germans had people there watching our troops from the high ground. But we never at any time did make any effort to occupy that republic. Following that, we had one or two scrimmages which were very, very bad. I was attached with, at one time, with the Gurkha regiment. Then I was with the New Zealanders. We went up across the Rubicon, which people will remember from ancient history. And then we had a... That's right. The area where that I've been describing of the fighting was between the Gothic line and the Rimini line. The Gothic line is on the east coast of Italy, just north of Pesaro, and it went across the open ground over to the mountain area. It's borders on the Adriatic Sea. Now, about 10 miles north of that, they had the Rimini line, where the Germans put up quite a defense for a few days. When that broke, they moved way back up towards the rivers, and our unit went into the town of Rimini for a rest of about 2 weeks or so.
And what date was this at?
This would be in November. Mm-hmm. See, it was a very slow-moving battle up there for that, from the Gothic line up to, and to breaking the Rimini line. It was a very slow effort. It took all of October and into November before we actually cleaned them out. Then, as I said, the unit pulled into Rimini for a rest, and for about 2 weeks. We set up, and this is the first time that the 7th Anti-Tank Regiment had been together since they left, since they actually landed in Italy. All during that time, the batteries were all split up in different little areas, but when we hit the town of Rimini, we were all together. And the colonel had, Colonel Gillies, who was commanding us, had a chance to carry out some inspections and pass out some orders of what was going on. We had a rather amusing thing in Rimini. We had our officers' mess set up in a small hotel which was on the beach. And the colonel was very keen on Italian food. So he got a hold of a couple of Italian chefs to come in and help out with the unit cooking. This went on fine for 3 or 4 days. But when he found out that he got Italian spices with his bacon and eggs in the morning, and finally I found out he'd had enough. Then, from Rimini, we moved back up, and there was small pockets of fighting, and then this is the area where we got involved in knocking down more houses and church towers, anything that might have been used as an observation post by the Germans. With the M10 gun, it was an extremely accurate gun, and you were able to line up two guns, one on each side of a house or a building, and chip away at the sides eventually it would collapse. And, you know, this was a great help to the infantry. There was a lot of this done, and up in the area of between Ravenna and Bandicovello. Then, in December, early December, we had our last push, and it was a matter of straightening up the line and moving up to the River Seno and pushing the Germans beyond the river. We moved up there, although there wasn't a great deal of fighting, and it happened for about one day. They stayed there and shelled pretty heavily, and then they pulled back. And we moved right up to the river. We stayed there until January.
Was this at Bandicovello?
Yes, this just beyond Bandicovello, yes.
And you had some action at Bandicovello knocking out church towers, did you?
Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. Using the M-10s?
Yes, with the M-10s, yeah. And also, once we moved up to the Seno River, there was a large water tower in the town of Lugo, which was just on the other side of the river. As a matter of fact, it was just about 3,000 yards from where we were positioned. And my troop fired at this tower one day, try and knock it down, but it was a steel structure on the bottom, and it's impossible to knock it down. We fired, looking at my notes, we fired 106 rounds at that tower, and we had 98 hits, according to the report from the survey regiment. So this gives you an idea how accurate the M10 gun was.
And did you use any armor-piercing shells?
Oh, yes. Yes, we were using armor-piercing shells most of the time. We did have some high-explosive shells, but mainly the M10 was an anti-tank gun which used armor-piercing shells all the time.
There were a couple of church towers which gave the Canadians considerable trouble, wasn't there, at Bandicovello?
Mm-hmm. This was the one that I just described that we couldn't knock down.
Oh, I see.
It wasn't a church tower in this, it was a water tower, actually. Yeah. And we consolidated there, and we stayed there over Christmas. My troop actually was in the, right up at the river on Christmas Day, and they took, part of the troops went back. And then we came out and had our Christmas about 3 or 4 days later. Mm-hmm. On the day after New Year's, we went back into action and took, and the infantry crossed the Naviglio Canal, which is along by the Seno River. There was a bit of fighting on that one. This was simply to straighten up the line so that we didn't have a gap in it between the where we were on the Seno and the canal. We had to get over here and straighten out the line for the winter, before we dug in for the winter. At that time, in this particular crossing at the Naviglio Canal, we ran into I was attached to the Princess Patricia Regiment for this particular show. And
when you mention you're dug in for the winter, that would be the winter of 45, wouldn't it?
44. Well, it was still December.
Yeah.
44, 45.
Yes. That's right. Referring to.
As I said, I was attached with the Prince of Patricia Regiment on this attack to clear up over the Naviglio Canal. My job was to take my M-10s up, right behind the infantry, and there were two or three machine gun posts and houses, which we were to go up there and knock down so they cleared away from them. But a rather amusing little thing happened that night. The engineers were to clear the road because they were it had been mined. And the part of the thing was that for a number of days, the Germans laid teller mines on the road. And the next night, our engineers went out and dug them out. And then, of course, the Germans put them back the next night, and they did the same thing again. So
nobody killed during this time because of a mix-up in the mines, was there?
No, not in that, no.
Was there any teller... Did you say teller mines?
Teller mines. Now, these are a ratchet type of mine. And they bit them down, and we had one sergeant major killed by... They go down, and as each vehicle goes out, one little ratchet goes down, and another one goes down. And eventually, possibly 10 vehicles would go over before it would explode. Mm-hmm.
And would this be a very large explosion, like it was a large mine?
Yeah, enough to wreck a vehicle, yes. The other part about these mines in this particular case, since the engineers finally decided that they were wasting their time digging these mines out every night, so when the Germans put them in the next time, they decided they wouldn't take them out until we were going to attack. And on the night of this attack, the engineers went out to pull out these mines, and they found that the Germans had cemented them in. And it took them 3 or 4 hours to clear these mines because they had to get vehicles and pull them out. Because they had, prior to that, they were just set in there, you see, loose. But they had cemented them in and held me up. I couldn't take my tanks down the road until the mines were cleared, you see. So we
and
eventually
how,
got there.
How
by
long
day.
Did you have to wait for that?
Oh, about 4 hours. We were supposed to go in about 4 in the morning, so we would be there at daybreak. I think it was almost 8 o'clock before we finally got across. So the infantry were held up right at the canal. They couldn't move. They just had to wait.
These mines, once they're cemented in like that, if one of them did go off, the impact would be lessened by that. By the cement casement, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yes, I suppose it would be. But they got up, you see.
Yeah.
Explosion was up more than... The idea of them was to catch a vehicle or a tank, and then blow the tracks off a tank, you see.
Yes. And so, anyway, you got by these barriers, then, these mines, and where did you go then?
Well, then that was actually the end of the fighting in Italy because we simply held the line during the winter. Mm-hmm. And then in February...
This would be...
45.
Yes.
February 45, the Canadian Corps were moved out of Italy and we all went over. Some went to Leghorn and we were... taken all the way back down to Naples, mm-hmm. put on boats, and we landed at Marseille in France, went all the way up France to Holland, where we moved into billets there.
Mm-hmm. Where was this in Holland, where you were in billets?
Sertogenbosch was the name of the place, the village. Well, it was rather a large town.
How long did it take you to get from France to Holland?
Well, after we got back, I would think it was possibly pretty well a whole month. It was into March before we got there. It took us 3 or 4 days. We took the M-10s on, went down by railroad car to to Naples. That took about 3 days, by the time we got them loaded and unloaded. And then we were in a British camp in Naples, right at the foot of Vesuvius, for about 7 days, I think, before we got onto the boats. And then we were taken, and it was just a day and a day and a half, I think, and we went up and landed at Marseille. There we stopped again for 4 or 5 days. We stayed there, and then we made the trek straight up to Holland, which was another 4 or 5 days. So it took entirely about a month before we got up to Holland. Mm-hmm. Then we, at that time, our guns were changed, and they took the M10s off the Germans and put on 17-pounders, the British gun, which was a much more powerful anti-tank gun. Fortunately, we never, more fortunately, I should say, we never had to use these guns. Because when we got there, the war was getting down to the end, and we were put in a reserve position, and looking after. Actually, we became infantry for a week or so, just before the end of the war.
And this was around Arnhem?
Yes. We went, we had one village right on the Rhine, the lower Rhine in Holland. Then we were taken from that. We went across the bridge at Emmerich in Germany, and came back around to the Allies had already crossed the Rhine at this time. And we came back, but there was still a pocket of Germans. Holland was still occupied by the Germans. And we came in there and took up a position, which we stayed for a few days. Then we were all, at that time, the war was winding down. We were brought back. We got our guns again. And then we got rumors
back to
at the war.
Where you got these guns? Back to where when you got your guns again?
Oh, back to Holland.
Okay.
Just close to Nijmegen.
And you were moved up into Holland around Arnhem then, around April of 1945.
That's right.
Okay.
Yes, we were there, just outside of Arnhem. And on May the 5th, they crossed the bridge at Arnhem, was still intact, although they had never been able to hold it. And on the morning of the 5th, the British infantry attacked, and I think I was one of the first, our troop of M10s were one of the first who crossed the bridge into the town of Arnhem. We went through there, and at that time the streets were lined with the Germans, all had their weapons hanging on their shoulders upside down, and they were just standing watching us as we went through. As far as they were concerned, the fighting was over.
So they were well aware.
They were rounded up after that, but when we first went through, nobody made any effort to round them up, but it was done slightly after that.
So they were well aware that by this stage...
It was all over.
Yeah.
They weren't fighting anymore. So we went through Arnhem, and beyond that, about 10 miles... And then we got orders to go forward to look after a prison camp. One other officer and myself were left behind, and we took all the M10s into a holding area where we stayed. Just the drivers with us. And we stayed there and actually didn't know until the 10th of May that the war was actually over, because we We had no communication.
Really?
On the 8th of May, we didn't know the war had actually officially ended.
Yeah.
Although we knew it was going to.
And this is, when you were there, that was the 7th Regiment.
7th Anti-Tank Regiment.
And were you with anybody else, any other units?
No, not then.
Not then.
No, we were. Once we crossed the bridge at Arnhem, the regiment came together then, and we went up into Holland as the other people had gone forward to a place called Busen, where we were billeted, and there was this German prison camp where they rounded up Germans and rounded them all up in there, and a certain number of the troops were occupied looking after that.
Could you describe for me some of the duties you did perform while in an infantry role in Holland?
Yes. Firstly, we were on the Rhine in Holland itself, in the small towns there, making sure that nobody looted in the villages and that, because the civilians had all left. Just before the end, we went back, crossed the Rhine River, and went into the town of Emmerich. Then we swung around to the north, up to the border of Holland, just inside of Holland, into a small area there.
And this is a movement which you described a little bit earlier.
Yes, I had mentioned this before. But our duties when we were there was to make sure that none of the civilians in the area were passing any information to the Germans. The Germans at this time still occupied Holland itself. So that we had to get the villagers together, and through the burgomaster and an interpreter, instruct them that at no time was anyone allowed on the dikes, and anybody who did venture up there would be shot on sight. I guess we did it effectively because we never had anybody up there. Although they had, before we got there, they had been crossing back and forwards all the time.
Were there any other specific duties that you had as infantry? Other than what you've already mentioned?
No, that's all we ever did at infantry, yeah.
Yeah.
But later on, the regiment did a sort of an infantry role in looking after German prison camps.
Mm-hmm. And so it's nearing the end for you in Holland.
That's right.
Could you describe now the events that went on for you, like where you went after this, what you did?
Well, after the war had now ended and the Germans had surrendered and were moving out of, well, into camps in Holland, this was early. I was only with the regiment there until the early part of June, and then I was, having been overseas at that time, just about 5 years, I was on rotation leave back to Canada. So we were flown over to England, and there we stayed another 3 weeks. The reason for that was that the boat that we were supposed to come back on was finally taken for the paratroop battalion, which were to go to the Far East. So that we had to wait for another convoy. I finally crossed back into Canada on the Louis Pass tour, landed at Halifax, and arrived in Ottawa on July the 1st, 1945.
And the war was over for you?
The war, well, it was pretty well over for me, although I still stayed in the force until 1947, Mm-hmm. Once I came back to Regina, I was asked to remain in and become an Army counselor. The duties of the Army counselor were to give some guidance to the soldiers as they were being discharged. Everybody was interviewed and find out where they were going. Most cases, people were going back to the farm or they had a job to go back to. There was a number who didn't have anything, and you would advise them that they should, depending on their education, whether they should go on to finish their high school or go to the university, or try and tell them what was available. I stayed on that until the end of 46. My original intent was to stay in the regular force, but then at that time they had decided to pull the Canadians back from Europe, and they cut down the forces because VE Day, the Japanese had surrendered and there was no more need for a large force. So I then left, and I came out in February 1947. I left the regular force.
VE Day was Victory in Europe Day, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry, I said VE Day, and I meant VJ Day.
Oh, I see.
August the 8th.
I'd just like to point out that at this point, then, that while you came back to England and then back to Canada, the 7th Regiment was awaiting repatriation then.
Yes.
Under the command of the 1st Army Group Royal Artillery. Mm-hmm. And this would be still in Holland, I presume.
Yes, they remained in Holland, yeah.
Until they got...
But not very much longer, though.
Yeah.
They came out in July, I believe. Or have you got the figure?
Yeah.
July?
Yeah, July 5th.
Yeah, yeah. It's about a month after I left. The whole regiment was sent back.
Well, that's basically it. Thank you very much, Colonel mm-hmm. Walsh.
And then I might just mention that...
That's fine. We get more time.
Might mention that I stayed in the militia until 65, you know.
Oh, okay. Was there...
Just a short little bit there, I can say.
Yeah. Well, if you could go on, then, because there might be something interesting in there.
Just a short bit.
Was that over here in Canada?
Yeah.
And you didn't get involved with any other kind of action then?
No action, no.
No.
Just a militia training, that's all.
Yeah,
just sort of ended up, I think.
Okay, well, thank you very much then.
Mm-hmm. Conscripts.